So I work in my day job at a nonprofit immigration law firm called Immigration Counseling Service. We provide immigration legal services to those who would not otherwise be able to afford representation. And so basically we employ a group of immigration attorneys and what are called accredited representatives who are authorized to practice immigration law with an immigration attorney at our firm. And a lot of the work that we do is working with victims of crime. There are immigration remedies available for undocumented persons who are victims of severe crimes, and our office does a lot of work with those populations. My role within that office is actually to work specifically with immigrant victims of human trafficking, and I actually don't do any of the legal work at all. I actually do social work. And so while an attorney is working with a victim of human trafficking, applying for a form of immigration relief, my role is to provide social services in helping that victim to be stable during that process, in connecting them to various resources, in hopefully connecting them to a human trafficking task force, which is going to investigate and we hope eventually prosecute the person who exploited the victim, and basically ensuring that person is comfortable and safe, and helping them to move forward with their life after this heinous crime was committed.
Thank you so much. And I, maybe before we go too much longer, maybe we should define what is human trafficking. So why don't you give us a definition, Kyle? What is human trafficking?
Well, without having the statute in front of me, because there is a legal definition of human trafficking, generally human trafficking involves commercial sexual exploitation by virtue of use of force, fraud, or coercion. And so if somebody is, and that's one branch of human trafficking, and so on the commercial sexual exploitation side, it is the type of situation where someone is exploited for sex. There's also labor trafficking, and labor trafficking can be domestic or foreign-born, where somebody is trafficked from out of the country into this country for purpose of exploiting their labor. And that would also be by virtue of force, fraud, or coercion of some kind. So that would be the very basic definition of trafficking as I could give it to you off the top of my head. I'm sure if I miss something, Chris can fill you in.
Okay. And well, thank you for that good general introduction about what it is. And so it may seem obvious why the Human Rights Task Force might be interested in this, but Damon, tell us about the creation of the task force and why and how the Human Rights Commission became involved.
Well, we became involved, was it 2012, Kyle?
Right.
With conversations with key stakeholders in the area, we found out that foreign-born human trafficking is an issue that unfortunately has little attention to it paid to it in our area in comparison, or in contrast, to domestic trafficking. And so a group of us within the Portland Human Rights Commission, is actually the City of Portland Human Rights Commission, decided to create a subcommittee or Human Trafficking Task Force, acronym is HTTF, to focus on the foreign-born issues as well. Not
exclusively.
Well, do you want to expand on that a little bit in terms of...
Exclusively with regard to the type of trafficking?
No, exclusively in regard to whether it is international or foreign-born.
Right, not exclusively. The issues that we're addressing are both foreign-born trafficking and domestic sex trafficking.
Great. And so what exactly are all the duties of the task force, and what type of things are you looking in specifically?
Well, we have begun over the last actually it's probably a year now, we've started a mapping project in partnership with Multnomah County and through some GIS resources to identify where certain underserved populations are in the county. We're using mapping tools, and we've created a map and identified where certain faith-based institutions are within the county. And through that, what we have done, and we had held our first event a few months ago, is try to hold a series of events, and our next one is this month that Kyle will talk about a little later, where a group of stakeholders can come together and create kind of a wraparound piece where people can come and have access to resources and conversations about this as an issue. Mm-hmm. So that's one of our projects that we've been addressing. Long term, we hope to also approach a couple of policy pieces down at the Oregon Legislature. We're considering three options for potential legislative concepts. One has to do with the possibility of expungement. So for people who have been coerced and have committed crimes under coercion in regards to trafficking, would be able to have their records expunged. That is a concept that has been initiated in other states, including Florida, New York, Nevada, Illinois, Vermont, Maryland, Hawaii, and New Jersey. Actually, the most recent law was passed in Florida last year, 2013.
I'm impressed that Florida has been that progressive.
Well,
they have a share. I actually have an acquaintance who was trafficked, snatched from the streets, and taken to a peach orchard and forced labor for a year and a half. And so to hear that this particular state is moving, and he was a national U.S. citizen.
Mm-hmm. Was that in Florida?
That was in Florida.
Wow.
Yes.
And one of the most...
He was taken from Georgia to Florida.
Wow. One of the more nationally recognized organizations doing anti-trafficking work is actually the Coalition of Immokalee Workers mm-hmm. down in Florida. And they've been at it for a number of years now. I've gotten some great publicity, including, I think, a mobile museum that they actually move around that kind of gives mm-hmm. people the experience of what it's like to be out in the field as a tomato picker, being exploited, not being able to leave the situation, and having your immigration status held over your head with the fear of death basically put into you. Florida's actually done pretty well on the trafficking side of things in terms of advocacy.
Mm-hmm. And so you were mentioning policy pieces, and what was the other two?
Also in the state of New York, they're recently established an initiative of special courts to handle prostitution and human trafficking cases, where all cases that go beyond arraignment will be referred to these particular courts. A judge, a prosecutor, and a defense attorney would confer, and victims of human trafficking or prostitution would be referred to specific tailored services such as drug treatment, education, job training, health care, or immigration assistance. And so defendants who comply with these recommended services can get their charges dropped. It's kind of similar to some drug diversion programs in some courts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a potential legislative concept that we might be thinking about long term as well. Another one may include the possibility of tuition reimbursement or assistance. So I guess that would potentially include providing the reduced or free tuition to individuals that have committed these crimes under threat of from a human trafficker. So in terms of a strategy, we are presently setting up meetings with local legislators that have a history locally of caring about these issues and trying to determine which of these concepts is as a for lack of a better term, more of a low-hanging fruit for 2015.
Sure.
And the way we frame that has to do with I guess the one that has less budget implications, frankly.
Might be easier, yeah.
Right.
I think when you look at the legislative pieces that Damon just talked about, there's kind of a theme that runs through all of that, and it's a theme that is really, I think, especially applicable to the survivors and victims of trafficking, and that's that there's a cycle of exploitation that occurs. People who are trafficked are generally very vulnerable populations. There are often substance abuse issues. There are often resources issues, healthcare issues that have to be addressed by these individuals, and they can't address them on their own at the time that they've been trafficked. And so when we first started the HTTF, one overriding theme was, because we're at the Human Rights Commission, Human Trafficking Task Force, we're not an enforcement body. Mm-hmm. What we can do is try to promote advocacy, advocate, and try to help to provide comprehensive social services for these survivors and these victims. And so when you look at things like record expungement, that's going to help somebody get a job to remove themselves from the cycle of exploitation. When you talk about tuition assistance, that's going to help somebody get an education to help remove them from that cycle of exploitation. When you talk about these drug or prostitution diversion programs, where their options will include drug treatment and potentially long-term residential care, health care, access to those things are all things that can be provided to these survivors and these victims that they wouldn't otherwise have. And the reason that a lot of these victims remain in these environments is that they are really trapped there because they don't have access. And so I think that the legislative pieces that Damon just talked about really address those things on point. I know with regard to the long-term residential care issue, that was something that our U.S. Attorney Amanda Marshall brought up on Saturday at a community forum on child sex trafficking. And, I think that's really, for lack of a better term, on her wish list. Mm-hmm. for being able to provide assistance to trafficking victims.
And Irene, you wanted to add something, some information.
Hi, my name is Irene Konev, and in my day job, I work with the City Auditor's Independent Police Review Division, where we accept commendations for good police work, as well as accept and investigate complaints of police misconduct. I'm here today with the Human Trafficking Task Force, and I just wanted to put the national human trafficking hotline out there and let folks know that whether you're a survivor or a victim of human trafficking, there's help out there. And I also wanted to engage community members to watch out for what human trafficking looks like and to call this number as well, because sometimes the best person to ask for help or the best person to find help for someone is the person that's not in the situation. The number is 1-800-3737-8888, and it's a 24-hour line that's available all the time. So if anyone sees something that looks strange or something that doesn't fit right, please call that number.
And what so, might look strange?
Yeah, how would you define looking strange for the average person?
So my background in history before I came to work for the city was working with domestic violence and sexual assault survivors. As part of that, we also worked with survivors, and I'm calling them survivors because I think victim puts a different spin mm-hmm. on the person, and it minimizes that person. I think anyone who survives these horrific days is a survivor, and it's more empowerment-based language. So some of the things that you could be asking, if you're, for example, in a restaurant and someone looks really tired or afraid, so some of the things that a person could ask do you feel emotionally safe, or do you feel safe just leaving your job? And a lot of times that person may not respond and not tell you, but if it's a restaurant you go to quite often and you're starting to see these signs, that's a good opportunity to call. A lot of times people are just surviving through the day and they don't want to have anything happen to them.
Yes. What about if you suspect there may be a problem in your neighborhood? Maybe you live in a neighborhood and you notice that there seems to be a lot of coming and going of folks that are unrelated. You want to be careful and not jump to conclusions, but what should you look for maybe in a house? A lot of us may recall a really sensationalized story that's not exactly human trafficking, but it's not unrelated. And that was the woman who had been abducted from her home and missing for 10 years and found down in California. Neighbors thought that there might be something, but the place was, it didn't stand out. It was ordinary in many respects. But what should people look out for?
I think just a combination of things that don't fit right.
Okay.
I think most of us can sense something's not right. Like, what is going on there? Why is there a child looking out of the window? I know that person doesn't have kids. What's going on? Why are people coming and going at different times of the night or just odd hours? So I think just being aware that there's a number to call. I'll give that number out again. It's 1-888-3737-8888. Locally, if you're not sure, there are also crisis lines for domestic violence and sexual assault survivors. There's the Portland Women's Crisis Line, which is 503-235-3333, I believe. I'm not sure exactly.
We'll check.
Yeah, and as part of my human trafficking task force role, I try to connect and, for example, setting up this interview and going to different events, tabling, and just getting the word out there that this is a pretty big problem for foreign-born or domestic traffic victims or survivors.
You're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Our guests this morning are members of the Human Trafficking Task Force of the Office of Human Rights here in Portland. Give us a call with your thoughts or questions, 503-231-8187. And let me remind our listeners who our guests are. And they are Irene Conniff, who is also a member of the Human Rights Task Force. Also joining us from the task force are Kyle Bussey and Damon Isaiah Turner, and from the Immigration Counseling Service is Chris
Kilmer.
Thank you. And Kyle, there's an event coming up in a couple of weeks that people might be interested in.
Yes, the Human Trafficking Task Force is teaming up with Immigration Counseling Service, Catholic Charities, the American Immigrant Lawyers Association, and Multnomah County Sheriff Keith Bickford and his group, and along with Chris's group, Oregonians Against Trafficking Humans, for a legal outreach event on April 27th from 3 to 6 p.m. That's a Sunday. It's going to take place at the Sovie Island Grange, and the address is 14443 Northwest Charlton Road in Portland, 97231. The purpose of the event is to provide free legal counseling to people who believe that they may be victims of crime. And the idea is that by doing that kind of outreach work, you are going to not only provide a valuable service to crime victims, you're also going to potentially identify survivors of trafficking. Because what happens generally is that a trafficking victim or survivor is not going to self-identify as a trafficking victim or survivor. They're going to think that they have been victimized in some way. That they're able to identify a little bit more readily.
Or rationalize.
Right. Mm-hmm. So domestic violence, kidnapping, labor, or wage theft.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of things are more easily identified than human trafficking generally. And so what these immigration lawyers are able to do. So there will be 12 immigration lawyers who are donating their time to provide services to these victims. And what they're able to do is to advise them on the immigration benefits that may be available to somebody who is a victim of crime. And so the idea is that you invite people to participate in this event, hoping that you'll be able to help them in a lot of ways, including making them aware of their rights as trafficking survivors.
And I want to tell our listeners that if you go to our webpage on KBOO, we have a link to that event as well as to your respective organizations.
Thank you, Cecil. I actually, if you don't mind, I just want to expand on one thing that Irene was mentioning. In terms of local resources to address the criminal side, too, a lot of people aren't aware that the Portland Police Bureau actually, in their East Precinct, off of like Washington and
107th or so.
They actually have full-time district attorney sergeant and three officers specifically assigned to sex trafficking, human trafficking cases. And from my understanding, down at Central District downtown, there are also three detectives and a sergeant also focused in this area. And another member that Kyle already referenced of our task force is Keith Bickford, who's deeply, deeply committed to these issues over a long period of time. And he's a detective in Multnomah County. And he and Chris work together often on these issues. So in terms of people, because to our community doesn't always know in terms of like to the criminal justice side, you know, in terms of that immediate assistance, you know, who to go to and that kind of thing. So just letting our cable listeners know that those resources are also there.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. And we welcome your calls. If you've got inquiries, if you're not sure about whether you might be someone who is a potential, I don't want to say victim, but what, as Irene said, survivor. If you've got questions because you are concerned about your wages being held or your immigration status being revealed, or in any other way in which you feel you're being coerced into action, if you have family members, if you're interested in volunteering your time, this is a good opportunity to call and get some more information. The phone number is 503-231-8187 here, and join us with your questions or comments. One of the things that I think might be really helpful is a lot of people may have some, for lack of a better word, a myth or a misconception that's associated with this, not the least of which is, that's not my problem. What are some of the myths that you encounter that we can kind of help debunk so that people can recognize that this is a serious issue, both for U.S. citizens and our newcomers?
I'll cover that a little bit. So I predominantly work, in fact, I exclusively work with foreign-born victims of human trafficking. And I think the first myth that comes to mind with most people is, well, these folks are undocumented. They broke United States immigration law in coming to the United States. So why don't we just send them back to wherever they came from? And the fact of the matter is that even though a victim of trafficking may have broken United States immigration law in coming to the United States, once they become a victim of a crime, they have rights in this country as crime victims, not to mention just the human rights that are afforded to them internationally and in the United States. And so a big part of what immigration attorneys will do is, in meeting with that person, they'll inform them of the fact that as a victim of a crime in the United States, if you are undocumented, you may be eligible for certain forms of immigration relief. There are actually visas that exist specifically for victims of crime. And even there's a visa specifically that exists for victims of human trafficking. And very few people know about this, and certainly it's not particularly well known to victims of crime out there who are just escaping a situation. So we do a lot of outreach around that issue.
And those are some important facts that many people may not be aware of. That's very, very important thing to know, to help bring people out of the shadows, to be able to step forward. So thank you for that. And again, a lot of this information will be shared at the free legal advice workshop conference it will be on April 27th. And can you give us again the time and the location again?
Sure. And I think it's important to to mention that the free legal advice program is intended for survivors of the criminal activity that they've identified. It's not going to be a forum like the one we just had on Saturday where people are coming together for general information about trafficking. It's specifically an outreach effort for these crime victims. So, but yes, it's Sunday, April 27th from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Sovie Island Grange, 14443 Northwest Charlton Road in Portland. There's a phone number to call if you have any questions about that or would like to RSVP. That's not required, but it would be great if you would do that, if you're interested in joining us. That number is 503-607-0444. I should also mention that there will be Spanish interpreters at the event, so let that be a barrier.
I noticed that you're holding it out on Sovie Island. Is there a particular reason it's out of the metro area?
Well, what we're planning to do is to make this a quarterly event mm-hmm. throughout the Portland metro area. And so as Damon mentioned earlier, we did our first outreach event in Wood Village.
Okay.
And so... And
so you go where the people are.
That's right. And also, as Damon mentioned, one of the first things that we engaged in as a task force is to start a mapping project to identify the most vulnerable at-risk populations for trafficking. And so in our efforts to do that, we've identified areas that are particularly vulnerable to this type of crime. And Sovie Island is one of those areas. We'll be continuing to hold these events throughout the city. And I imagine there will be one coming to the metro or more of the metro Portland area in the next, I would say, 8 months. But the idea is that we want to spread the efforts of these volunteer attorneys around as much as we can. And so we're going to do them in different geographical areas.
Celeste, I was thinking about your question that you asked a few minutes ago too about myths, and it just wanted to address that. There seems to be, or hopefully, and we're a part of this, a trend of the lessening of the decriminalization of the survivor or the victim, and hopefully there's more of a trend in that, recognizing that, whereas I don't think it was always that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there are groups like Little Sisters Foundation and East Oklahoma County, I think Rotary Club, that are trying to address demand as an issue. And kind of looking at this from using economic terms, I guess, in terms I think that addresses some of the myths sometimes in terms of, like, you know, people should understand that to not look at those who are victims or survivors of human trafficking in the criminal sense.
Absolutely, yes. And again, you know, and I want to emphasize the fact that this is not necessarily about your immigration status. If a person comes here and they become a victim of a crime, the stakes change. the stakes change. And I know quite often we deal with a combination of apathy or sometimes just outright hostility sometimes when it comes to addressing issues of immigration, because we're not recognizing that it doesn't have to be a scarcity model. You know, people, we talk about come to the country, have opportunities, and then we're surprised when people want to do that to have a better life. And so once a person comes here again, as I'm hearing said more and more, and I want to really emphasize that, this is a crime against them. This is not them necessarily participating in anything. And so I really want to emphasize that this is an opportunity to bring family members, or if you think you have been criminalized or threatened in any sense, come get some free legal advice. And this includes people maybe who have had their passports held, their identification held, not just your pay. And this might include family members who are here, and maybe they are caught up in a situation and you're thinking, okay, this looks, as you said earlier, Irene, a little suspicious. Things are not adding up. Come, ask questions, and know that you'll get some support, that you'll get understanding, and that you'll get some services.
And speaking of questions, we have a couple of callers online.
Thank you for your patience. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. I tuned in a little bit late, but I think this question is germane, even if it's just a tangent. Recently, three women were found in Cleveland, Ohio, being held against their will for 10 years. And, you know, there's other stories like, I think her name's J.C. Dugard, or Stacy Dugard, who was held for like 20 years in the backyard of somebody. How does this happen? I mean, how does it happen? That's all. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mary, for your question. And I'm looking at our panels to share their thoughts. Go ahead, Chris.
One thing to really note about human trafficking, and this is really important because it also pertains to statistics around the issue of human trafficking, is that this is an incredibly hidden crime. It is, by its nature, a hidden crime. With the labor trafficking that I see and the foreign-born trafficking that we see, traffickers go out of their way to make sure that these victims are hidden away. So you're talking about somebody whose life is completely controlled by somebody else. They are terrified. They are told that if they ever come out, that they're going to be deported, that they have no rights in this country. Oftentimes the trafficker facilitated bringing that person into the United States, and they know either through gang connections or through criminal connections back in the home country where that person's family is. And they can very easily talk to the victim and say, you know what, if you try and leave, if you try and escape, I know where your family is. You think that the terrible things that are happening to you now are bad? Just imagine all the things that I can do to your family members back in the home country. You don't need to actually physically lock somebody up anymore to keep them isolated. All you have to do is psychologically threaten them to the point where they are so afraid for themselves and for their family members that they're not going to leave the situation. So it's a very, very hidden crime. And as a result of that, it doesn't get reported, and it's hard to identify.
I think that if you go back to the definition of trafficking that we were talking about earlier, it's exploitation through force, fraud, or coercion. And that's really what Chris is talking about here, that coercion aspect. The psychological abuse that takes place in these kinds of situations can be just horrifying. And, you know, it's really amazing and courageous that the woman in Cleveland was able to get out and was even willing to walk out a door, even if it was open. I don't know that those were the facts, and I'm sure they weren't, but even if that was the case, the psychological abuse that was likely inflicted on this person was likely to stand in the way of any effort to escape that she would have had, and that's not atypical of these kinds of situations on both the domestic and foreign-born side.
And the caller's example of the Cleveland situation speaks to Irene's earlier point about being cognizant of what's going on around you.
Yes, that's just what I was going to say. Notice if you have a person who has said comes to work and keeps to themselves, doesn't discuss anything, and has an attitude of being perhaps controlled or coerced. But more importantly, maybe their wages are not right, and you see something. You see something, advocate for them. If you approach them and you approach them calmly, quietly, and discreetly, and they don't want to talk for themselves, maybe you should come to this free legal advice opportunity and get some more information so you can advocate effectively for the person.
And that's a very good point. And as Irene mentioned earlier, that National Trafficking Hotline, the National Human Trafficking Hotline, the 888-3737-888 number, is a number that you can call if you see suspicious activity that you think could be an indicator of trafficking. And in fact, that is exactly what happens in most cases. If you look at the data from the Polaris Project, which collects the data from the Human Trafficking Hotline, you'll see that a lot of the calls that do come in are not, or most of the calls that do come in are not from the trafficking survivors themselves. They're from people who are suspicious that trafficking may be taking place, and they're calling to find out what's going on.
And let's go to another caller. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning, Joanne.
Yes, hello. I appreciate the people giving out telephone numbers. I really appreciate it. Thank you. I got a couple of questions. First of all, is Canada involved in these problems? Number two, do you put your clients, give them housing with the Home Forward Housing Authority? And number three, do you work with Homeland Security? And thank you. Bye.
Okay, a series of questions. I'm Chris, the lawyer.
Not a lawyer, actually, a social worker, but I work with lawyers. Uh-huh. And the answers, let's see if I can remember those questions. I'll work backwards.
Okay.
So in terms of working with Homeland Security, we work on a federal human trafficking task force, which is a combination of social service organizations, immigration attorneys, employment attorneys, and then federal and local law enforcement, which includes sheriff's offices, police departments, the FBI, district attorneys, as well as federal prosecutors from the United States Attorney's Office, and the Department of Homeland Security, very specifically, though, Homeland Security Investigations, which is part of the Immigration Customs Enforcement branch. There are two branches of Immigration Customs Enforcement. Homeland Security Investigations is charged with investigating crimes involving immigration, and actually has the authority to provide temporary relief to immigrant victims of crimes, specifically an immigrant victim of human trafficking, under certain situations. So they are a partner of ours. Obviously, as a social service provider, my duty is to my client. So I inform my client of what it's going to be like in who they're going to be partnering with. And there's a significant fear, of course, of working with federal law enforcement. But they are our partners. We trust them. They refer cases to us. We have a really good working relationship, and so we do try to dispel that deeply ingrained fear with the survivors that we work with, that they can work with us and with our federal partners. So that's the answer to question number one.
Let me kind of dig a little deeper in that, because that's hearing that question, there's kind of like two points to that, two faces to that question. On one hand, there's the concern that, as you mentioned, the fear of coming forward, what will this do if my immigration status is ambiguous? But on the other hand, you have some U.S. born folks who feel that that's an unfair advantage or support. And I want to debunk that, because a lot of people are feeling that, well, gee, I work hard and I don't get these opportunities, you know, for housing or what have you. And so I hear these questions on these comments a lot, and I kind of want to deconstruct that. This is not a freebie. This is somebody who is a victim of crime. And if you're a victim of crime, whether you are a foreign-born person or a U.S. citizen, there are certain supports that are available to everybody.
Right. So my particular program actually is specifically there for immigrant victims of human trafficking who do not have other support mechanisms in place. So take, for example, a United States citizen victim. They, as a United States citizen, they're still going to be eligible for food stamps.
Right.
They're still going to be eligible for temporary assistance to needy families.
Housing.
Medical care.
Right.
Various other, mm-hmm. what we would call safety net services, yes. here in the United States.
Yes.
When you're undocumented, you are not eligible for any of those safety net services. And so my program is actually specifically there, provided with a very small stipend of money that is available to me to help, for example, pay the medical bills for a trafficking victim, pay to help them get some counseling, pay to help them pay, you know, back rent or an electricity bill because they get a shutoff notice, that sort of thing. So we're really there as a temporary, essentially emergency service to help stabilize that victim until such a time as they get some immigration status, and then they're going to be eligible for those services that a U.S. citizen will be eligible for, depending on what type of immigration relief they receive.
And so that would cover whether or not they get temporary housing. It may not be through Home Forward per se, but it might be a temporary voucher with one of the many partners that does housing. And then I think our other question was with regard to Canada, and I think it's safe to say that any country can be involved in human trafficking, yeah. and that there isn't one that we know of that that really is not involved and polices themselves so that they don't have any issues.
Absolutely, yeah. Border zones, port city, you know, you name it. Trafficking victims come from every part of the world, and they enter the United States in many, many different ways. Many trafficking victims actually come to the United States with a legitimate, perfectly valid visa. They were recruited, they were given a visa, they were told they were going to be doing work in some place in the United States. At the very last minute before they get on the plane in wherever they're coming from, they're told, oh, change of plans, you're going to get off the plane here and you're going to meet my agent. They don't have a choice anymore. They've given up everything that they have in the home country to come to the United States. They get off the plane in, say, Portland, mm-hmm. And the agent whisks them away and tells them, oh, well, here's what's going to actually be happening, takes away their documentation and tells them they're going to be working, you know, 15, 20-hour days, and they're not going to be being paid what they told they were going to be being paid.
Or some people are just snatched, and they may come in undocumented, but that was not their fault. They didn't plan to come here.
That as well, yes.
Yes.
What about the issue, I think it's important to talk about labor and how that impact,
yes.
And that role. But another aspect, when I hear of human trafficking, I hear of prostitution. Could you address that issue about how that is addressed in terms of identifying people who may be victims, and that whole other, maybe beyond the borders of this conversation about whether or not someone should be engaged in sexual prostitution? Of people victims or not?
I can address that just to a limited extent. Most of my experience is with foreign-born labor trafficking victims, but I've worked for a long time and partnered with many organizations that specialize in working with what we call commercially sexually exploited children. The acronym is CSEC. The fact of the matter is that there is no such thing as a child prostitute.
Thank you.
Legally, under the age of 18, if you are engaged in commercial sex of any kind, even if you 100% are
by your
not
own choice.
Being exploited by mm-hmm. your own choice, engaged in that activity, and most children who are involved in commercially sexual exploitation of children are not doing it through their own choice. But legally, under United States law, that person, if they're under 18, is a victim of human trafficking, if they're engaging in commercial sex of any kind. And in terms of how this happens, I mean, it happens in a number of ways, but what we're seeing, at least with the federal law enforcement partners that I work with, is that they pull a lot of these kids out of the internet. They see these kids, used to be Craigslist, now there's a website called Backpage, but these kids are basically being prostituted online by their pimp. And thankfully, our partners in law enforcement have gotten extraordinarily good at identifying these kids. The hard part is keeping track of them, because the pimps are moving them around a lot. And so you'll see kids who are maybe down in Southern California one week, and then they're in Las Vegas the next, and then they're in the Bay Area, and then they're in Portland, and then they're in Seattle. They move around a fair amount. But this is happening happening a lot online, which is not to say that it's not also happening out on the streets. But I know that a lot of what law enforcement is looking at now is this stuff happening online.
Some people turn, they recognize that, but do some people turn an eye away from adults who are caught up in this, who are caught up in the sex industry, saying, you know, she's 23, she knows what she's doing.
They have agency when maybe they have either grown up in this, or again, they've got their papers taken, or they're being coerced.
I think that's absolutely true. I think that does tend to get overlooked. I think it's especially tragic because a lot of these folks were exploited before they became quote unquote adults at the age of 18. And so that's problematic. They age out in that regard. And once you age out in that situation, unfortunately, at that point, we really do have to show that element of force, fraud, and coercion, mm-hmm. as opposed to if somebody's under 18. And if they're under 18, they're engaging in commercial sex, they're a victim. Once you're over 18, which when you think about it is a pretty arbitrary age to make that decision, but that's just how the laws are written. At that point, you've got to really show that that person is being forced, defrauded, or coerced in order for them to be a victim of human trafficking under the law. Now, it doesn't mean that they're not being exploited, right. And it doesn't mean that terrible, horrible things are not happening to them.
Right. But what about if they've kind of, as you said, aged out? Does that history help them? This is an odd way of putting it, but does it support their case?
That is a good question. Since I'm not a legal expert, mm-hmm. I don't feel comfortable answering that. I would certainly hope so.
And you wanted to say something, Irene.
I just wanted to say that for anyone living in whatever situation you're living in, whatever is happening to you, as long as you're willing to reach out, there's a lot of help out there. And so I just wanted to plug the numbers back in for Portland Women's Crisis Line locally, 503-235-5333. And the national hotline, which is 1-888-3737-8888. And another number to call is 1-866-347-2423. And just wanted to say, no matter what the situation is, find some help. I know it's easier said than done. Don't give up hope. And there are people who are ready to help. And if you're watching something happen, don't hesitate. Make that call today.
And Carol, could you share again the information about the event on the 27th?
Yes, that's Sunday, April 27th from 3 to 6 p.m. That's free legal advice for victims of crime. We're particularly looking to assist trafficking victims, trafficking survivors. So generally, we want to make sure that that language is not a barrier, so we're going to have translation services there. We also want to make sure that that childcare is not a barrier, so we will have places for families to gather. We'll have food there. And there will be plenty of resources to obtain the legal advice that you need to find out if there is some remedy for you based on your status as a trafficking survivor. Again, the number to call is 503-607-0444 if you want more information or like to RSVP. And that is going to be at Sobey Island Grange, 1443 Northwest Charlton in Portland, 97231.
Okay, and Damon, you had
Just to address some of what Celeste asked and Chris addressed, our policies here in our state tend to and correctly address extremely punitive measures for those under 18 that participate in the, in these kind of activities, but there tends to be a lack of after 18 policy issues remedies. Oh, okay, thanks. and we kind of feel like that's a place where we kind of lack in that in Oregon. So what happens after you're 18? And so we help to kind of help to pick up the slack there.
And if people are interested in the task force, how might they become involved?
The best way to get involved with the Human Trafficking Task Force of the Human Rights Commission is to go to the Human Rights Commission website, which is on the City of Portland. You can get there through the City of Portland website. And there are emails and numbers to call on the website. And you can always get in touch with the program coordinator at the Office of Equity and Human Rights to get a message to any of us on the commission. I just want to mention that one thing that is severely lacking in assisting victims and survivors is comprehensive social services. It's something that our U.S. attorney was talking about on Saturday, something that we have come to learn. And so contact your state and federal representatives. Demand that they address the problem that we have. We need comprehensive social services, including long-time residential care.
Thank you so much. And thank you, members of the task force. Thank you, Chris, Irene, Kyle, and Damon. And you have been listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey.
And as William Wilberforce said in the 19th century, you may choose to look the other way, but you can never say again that you did not know.
Stay tuned to KBOO Portland, your community connection, coming up at 9, Old Mo Variety Hour. Bill Resnick interviews John Fefner about the disinvestment by governments in maintaining vital infrastructures essential for civilized life. Jan Hawken interviews Sophie Smith. 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. 10:15, Locust Focus with host Barbara Bernstein. Dr. David Naiman will speak on Health Watch at 11 o'clock. And at 11:30, Health and Healthcare Forum host Roberta Hall speaks with Jeff Siminski. All of this and more because you are our supporter. Not a member? You can become one today. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. Thank you for supporting and thank you for listening.
Our jails and prisons have become overcrowded with people suffering from mental illness. Many people incarcerated are also addicted to drugs and alcohol. What treatment is being provided? Tune in to Prison Pipeline April 14th to hear Doyle Smith of Dual Diagnosis Anonymous of Oregon talk about the need for treatment programs in our jails and prisons. That's Prison Pipeline April 14th at 6:30 p.m.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock, and up next is the Old Mole Variety Hour. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University's 5 part-time MBA programs designed for adults who are seeking to enhance skills, revitalize career potential, and gain new knowledge that can be applied at work the next day. Enrolling now for summer term. Details at merrillhurst.edu.
Wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, Portland's only community-owned and democratically run radio station. Welcome to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Tom Becker. Joe Clement is our engineer. The Old Mole is dedicated to bringing you different perspectives on history, culture, politics, and current events than that of the corporate-owned conventional news media. Today on our program, Bill Resnick will be talking with John Pfeffer, the co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus, a web journal at the Institute for Policy Studies. They'll be discussing the enormous threats to humanity and the planet, not just from climate change, but from the worldwide disinvestment in infrastructure that is undermining such essentials for civilized life as sewage disposal and water delivery systems. I'll be sharing an article that discusses the growing discrepancy between worker productivity and wages and the ideological deceptions that seek to justify it. The article is entitled, The Harder You Work, The Richer They Get, Wages, Profits, and Productivity. It's by Pete Dolak. In the second half of today's program, Jan Hawken will be talking with Sophie Smith, a volunteer with a group called People Helping People, which seeks to ease the plight of would-be migrants in our southern border. Including the program today, Bill Resnick will be back with a reading on how Venezuelan capitalists are attempting to undermine the government. But now, here's Bill with John Pfeffer talking about our human prospects in an increasingly dangerous world.
John Pfeffer, welcome to KBOO.
Thanks for having me on the show.
John Pfeffer is co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus. It's a web journal sponsored by the Institute for Policy Studies. He's written several books, including Crusade 2.0, The West Resurgent War on Islam. In his most recent article for Foreign Policy and Focus, the title is America's Homegrown Terror. He points out that while our establishment, its military, police, anti-terrorist industries, they're obsessively concerned with and pouring resources into protection from terrorists and allegedly hostile nations. But John Pfeffer points out, in fact, the greatest threats to life and limb in this country, short-term and especially long-term, are homegrown and not from terrorists. So, John Pfeffer, let's begin with the many threats of mass death and destruction that current elites have chosen to ignore.
Well, the most obvious one is climate change. This is an existential threat. This is not just a threat to a particular city or a particular people. It's not even a threat to a particular country. It's a threat to the entire world. And generally speaking, countries around the world have ignored this. We've seen an enormous increase since the financial crisis of a couple years ago. We've seen an enormous increase once again of the use of fossil fuels, which has only pushed up the global temperature more and increased the amount of carbon emissions in the atmosphere, all of which contributes to a situation in which the entire planet is basically in threat. Here in the United States, of course, we're going to face this in a number of different ways. We'll face this, of course, along our coasts as we see rising waters. We will see this in terms of more extreme weather, producing the kinds of hurricanes that we've experienced in the past, like Katrina and others. And we'll see as well changes in agriculture as areas of the country which previously had supported enormous amount of the food grown not only for our country but for the world, for instance, in the Midwest, simply becoming too warm and without enough water to sustain agricultural production. And so all of this contributes to an enormous threat to the livelihoods of the people of our country, the livelihoods of people around the world, and frankly, the planet itself.
There's also, in my reading, climate change would greatly reduce production, but we also have other things reducing production, which is like the overuse of aquifers and running out of water in all sorts of places. There's the overuse and poisoning of soils, the degradation of the ocean, the acidification of the ocean and degradation of it. Also the chemical time bomb. We're filling our bodies with more and more chemicals. At some point, there's going to be interaction effects which could well be deadly. It seems to me there's these other enormous risks as well.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in many ways, you're pointing to one of the kind of central flaws of our industrial model, and that is that we basically believe we should use things up as quickly as possible, and we have in the back of our mind this idea that as we use up one resource, another resource will come online that we can use. And that has been the case in the past. And so I think, you know, we have been kind of lulled into believing that we will find some inexhaustible resource that will suddenly spring to our use in the upcoming future, whether it's cold fusion or what have you. But this attitude of treating the world's resources as something that we must use as quickly as possible in order to have as rapid economic development as possible has put an enormous strain on these resources. As you point out, we've essentially poisoned the oceans. We have taken down the lungs of the planet, the trees that provide us with the oxygen that's necessary, both in developed countries, but even more critically in areas like the Amazon. We have, with pollution of the air, pollution of the soil, endangered the food production that we rely upon. And again, we think that with a kind of technical fix, another green revolution, for instance, we'll be able to boost food production to meet the growing needs of our growing population. But fundamentally, we're exhausting these resources, exhausting the waters, exhausting the soil.
John Pfeffer, before we get into the how these ideas have developed and the extent to which it's influenced by the profit considerations of the corporate elite, let's talk about the other kinds of events that you've written about, that it's not the long-term mass death and poisoning of the planet, but just the lack of maintenance and regulation of the whole set of sort of industrial facilities and other kinds in the United States, many of which are now enormously dangerous.
Let's start with the nuclear industry. This is a particularly critical industry because many people look to nuclear power as the key alternative to fossil fuels. It's somehow through a rejuvenation of the nuclear industry, we'll be able to solve the climate change problem and provide the kind of energy we need for continued economic growth. I don't want to address that particular question yet, but I do want to point out that the nuclear industry produces an enormous amount of nuclear waste. There have been various plans to send this waste out to very faraway galaxies